We shall read from one verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and part of the purport which Prabhupada mentions in relation to Ramanujacharya and in relation to Krishna consciousness. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, Chapter 7, entitled Lord Chaitanya in Five Features. Text 121. Via Sira Sutreta Kahe Parinama Vada. Via Samranta Balitara Ut Taila Vivada. Via Sera Sutrete Kahe Parinama Vada. Via Samriranta Bali Tara Utaila Vivada. Via Sera Sutrete Kahe Parinama Vada. Via Samriranta Bali Tara Utaila Vivada. Last concluding paragraph. Non-devotees factually appreciate the wonderful creation of material nature, but they cannot appreciate the intelligence and energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is behind this material creation. Sripad Ramanujacharya, however, refers to a sutra from the Aitareya Upanishad 1.1.1. Atmava idam agra asit, which points out that the Supreme Atma, the Absolute Truth, existed before the creation. One may argue, quote, If the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely spiritual, how is it possible for Him to be the origin of creation and have within Himself both material and spiritual energies? Quote, unquote. To answer this challenge, Sripad Ramanujacharya quotes a mantra from the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1 that states, Yatova imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayantyabhi samvishanti. This mantra confirms that the entire cosmic manifestation emanates from the Absolute Truth, rests upon the Absolute Truth, and after annihilation again re-enters the body of the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The living entity is originally spiritual, and when he enters the spiritual world or the body of the Supreme Lord, he still retains his identity as an individual soul. In this connection, Sripad Ramanujacharya gives the analogy that when a green bird enters a green tree, it does not become one with the tree. It retains its identity as a bird, although it appears to merge with the greenness of the tree. To give another analogy, an animal that enters the forest keeps its individuality, although apparently the beast merges with the forest. Similarly, in material existence, both the material energy and the living entities of the marginal potency maintain their individuality. Thus, although the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead interact within the cosmic manifestation, each keeps its separate individual existence, merging with the material or spiritual energies, therefore, does not involve loss of individuality. According to Sri Ramanuja Pad's theory of Vishishtadvaita, although all the energies of the Lord are one, each keeps its individuality, Vishishtya. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Yakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jana Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanabhyo Vaishnavabhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In a particular lecture in New York City, based on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, on April 27, 1966, Srila Prabhupada had this to say, that the Vedic literatures are all interrelated. They are not contradictory. In this particular verse, it appears that Sankaracharya is contradictory to the conclusions of Srila Vyasadeva. And then Srila Prabhupada said that there are many great acharyas, and then he gives a particular consciousness or function of the acharyas, and he calls them reformers. And he gives several examples, and he says, for example, Buddha appeared in India, Sankaracharya came, then Ramanuja Acharya came, and then Madhavacharya came. And then he says, very lately Lord Chaitanya came. Then Srila Prabhupada says that although externally they may appear contradictory, but there's a link. A link, although superficially we may see Buddha speaking something which is contradictory to Sankaracharya, and Sankaracharya's teachings are quite contradictory to Ramanujacharya, who is speaking something which is also in contradiction to Sankaracharya, as given in the purport by Srila Prabhupada. So one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, why these contradictions, although they are all acharyas? Then Srila Prabhupada said, there is no contradiction. See? So it is a question of studying how Srila Prabhupada said that they were paving the way for different types of mentalities of people in different periods of time. And they are paving the way simply for the ultimate spiritual realization. But each one had to bring the consciousness of the people at that time step by step. Then Srila Prabhupada explains that Lord Buddha's teachings is simply detachment from matter, which they term quite commonly as nirvana. But he does so because he only speaks in relation to being spirit soul. So it is sort of accepted that Lord Buddha came at a time when the so-called representatives of the Vedic literatures, namely the Brahmanas, you know, they were polluting or misguiding or misdecoding the conclusions of the scriptures. So Buddha, who is an empowered avesh or feature of Vishnu or Krishna, he denied the teachings of the Vedas because he could not, you could say in one sense, deny the true nature of the Brahmanical class. In other words, don't fight with the polluted Brahmanas. Keep the dharma that the Brahmanas should be respected. At the same time, deny the teachings of the Vedas. So that's what Buddha did. So how did he deny the teachings of the Vedas? The teachings of the Vedas were misconstrued and were mis, represented by the Brahmanas, which can be like said it is like minus 20, minus 19, minus 18, minus 17. In other words, not this, not that, minus 2, and then bring it to minus 1. See? Then Buddha said, all this is neti neti, not this, not that, not that. Bring it to minus 1. And for minus 1, he said, then we'll come to the stage of neutrality, which is 0. And that's where he stopped his teachings. See, that everything is, all what you're doing is negative, but it ends in nothing. It ends in nothing. Sunyavad. See? So then after Buddha came Sankaracharya. He said, yeah, Buddha is okay. He's right. That everything ends in nothing. In other words, don't be attached to matter, which is minus, 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 but detach. Detach means cut. Cut, 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 cut. Come to nothing. Zero. But Sankaracharya and Srila Prabhupada also said, Sankaracharya, little more than Buddha in this particular. Sankara said, little more than Buddha. And how? Rejecting matter is not all. Rejecting matter is not all. And Sankaracharya Prabhupada said, in a simplistic word, Sankaracharya says, the real thing is spirit. The real thing is spirit. So from zero, no material activity, detachment, the real thing is spirit. We come to one. Come to one. Everyone is one in spirit. So therefore Srila Prabhupada said, no contradiction. No contradiction. Everything is one in spirit. But when they take Sankaracharya's teachings of saying everything is from zero, nothing material, detachment, nirvana, and then you come to one in spirit, people form that as the absolute conclusion. So that is the problem. One in spirit. Like that. So then came Ramanujacharya. Visheshadvaita. That everything is one word and different from. And Srila Prabhupada gives the famous analogy, and he says the Shastras say, even in Bhagavad Gita purports, and in this particular purport, but that original analogy comes from Sripad Ramanujacharya. The green bird entering the green. See, comes from Ramanujacharya. Prabhupada quotes that so often. Yeah. So Ramanujacharya said everything is one word and at the same time different from. And in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada gives his very own original analogy also here earlier on in the purport. Very beautiful. Very own analogy. I'll read it for you. In relation to supporting Ramanujacharya, Srila Prabhupada said that a person can create many things by the transformation of his energy. For example, a businessman transforms his energy by establishing many big factories or business organizations. Yet he remains a person, although his energy has been transformed into these many factories or business concerns. Nice. Original analogy by Prabhupada. And then Srila Prabhupada gives his own original analogy, which I read in the purport. To give another analogy, an animal that enters a forest keeps his individuality although apparently the beast merges with the forest. So Srila Prabhupada gives this origination of his own analogies also. Now, Ramanujacharya, in a one with a different form. So he sort of originally gave the philosophy of Achincha Bheda, Abheda, Tattva, but not in a very pronounced way. Still, despite that, many, many impersonalists started, propagating the partial understanding of the Absolute Truth in relation to the philosophy of Sankaracharya. All is one. See? Another form of atheism, Srila Prabhupada says. Then after Ramanujacharya, Srila Prabhupada says that Madhavacharya appeared. Isn't that famous? There's not only one, there's two. So he made it super clear. The subordinate soul and the supreme soul. So zero of Buddha to one of Sankaracharya to the introduction of the Lord and his energies as different from and one with Ramanujacharya. But Madhavacharya made it one and two. One and two. Yeah. Then Prabhupada said, lately, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And he says, yes, there's zero, there's one and two, and there's one, two, three, four, five, six, eternally. Gopi Bhatta Pada Kamalayo Dasa Dasa Anadasa. Yeah. So Mahaprabhu supported Madhavacharya. Mahaprabhu supported Ramanujacharya with Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva, energies and, you know, source of energy. And he supported Sankaracharya as well as Buddha and brought it back to the original teachings of the Vedic literature. Srila Prabhupada says a very nice thing. It's quite interesting here, Srila Prabhupada says. In this last paragraph of today's purport, Sripad Sankaracharya has tried to mislead the readers of the Vedanta Sutra by misinterpreting the words Anandamayo Abhyasat. And he has even tried to find fault with Vyasadeva. All the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra need not be examined here. However, since we intend to present the Vedanta Sutra in a separate volume, so Srila Prabhupada intended to translate the Vedanta Sutra. And he did. Any? Which is that book? Huh? Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. What is the first aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra? Janmadi Asya Yataha. And what's the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Starts with that aphorism. Janmadi Asya Yataha. Yeah. Itarashus. What? Yabhigyana Swatyanarede Brahma Rida Adhikavaya. That is the Vedanta Sutra. And Prabhupada did mention also as, complimenting Radha Gopinath Prabhu's point that the feature of the Vedanta Sutra is the commentaries of Srila Prabhupada in the purports in Bhagavad Gita as it is also. Because it's mentioned about Vedanta Sutra and the Bhagavad Gita too. So that's also supported there. And the claim of the Vedanta Sutra is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. All of Prabhupada's translations are the Vedanta Sutra. Veda means knowledge, Anta means conclusion. And sutra means it's given in a precise form, not lengthily, in a precise form. Yeah. In another lecture, Srila Prabhupada, this is in London in July 28, 1973. Probably Aurasa Mandala may have been present there. Right? At this particular lecture. Yeah. And Srila Prabhupada says, there was one very poor disciple. You may know this history, but hearing it from Prabhupada, it's pretty special. Yeah. So there's one poor disciple of Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya came to this disciple's home and he saw there was no one in the home. Yeah. So note, Srila Prabhupada doesn't use the word house. He uses the word home. So that's how you detect this meaning. So home means personalism. House means impersonalism. In other words, you go to a house, but there's no relationships. They live there, but there's no relationships. Home means there's relationships. That's what makes a house a home. There's relationships, personalism. And the special personalism Prabhupada is saying here is that when you go to the home of a devotee householder, you must be fed. You must be fed. Offered some prasad. Yeah. So when Ramanujacharya came to this poor disciple's home, he at first he thought there was no one at home and he was a little bit confused. Why is no one at home? Actually, in a home, there should always be somebody. Because, you know, it's atithi bhav. That means, you know, you don't tell. A sadhu doesn't have to tell somebody he is coming to the home. Of course, nowadays you have to make appointment and make arrangements. You know, oh, you came, we didn't know you were going to come. Not like that. So Ramanuja came and he says, why? No one is at home? Like that. But he could understand that that's not the culture. There must be someone at home because the door was closed but unlocked. Right? But when he knocked, nobody's answering. And that type of knock is that, you know, they have a little bit bar and you hit, you know, you lift it up and you hit. Not no one answering. Yeah. Yeah. Because that when you have that kind of bar and sort of a wooden piece over the door, not a metal piece, now they have metal piece. When wood touches wood, it's very auspicious. Not nowadays they have that bell in a cling. That's not auspicious. Wood, because When you ring a doorbell that says kring, and it's like, why somebody has come, you know? I have to go to the door. I'm busy watching TV. They're disturbing me. But with the wood, when wood like a sort of a semicircular piece of wood. When you lift it up and you hit from the hinge onto the door, it's very auspicious. But nobody answered. See? But Ramanujacharya could understand that someone is there, like that. So he again knocked the door, there was no response. But knocking, that the wife was in there, it means that maybe she's in there, but she is embarrassed to expose herself. Why? Because he couldn't even afford clothes. Couldn't even afford clothes. So Ramanujacharya took out his chadar and he pushed the door a little bit and he gave the chadda, she pulled the chadda, she clothed herself, and then she opened the door. Like that. So, then she offered obeisances. But Ramanuja could understand that the position, that they were so poor, couldn't even afford clothing for the wife. Okay. And even the son could not see her. Even the son cannot see her. A very chaste woman, she must not be seen in the light when she doesn't have clothes on. Even the sun, she'll always draw the curtains and live inside. Even the sun's rays cannot see her. It's like that. And then Srila Prabhupada said that immediately Ramanuja entered the home and she offered obeisances and she said, please sit down. Now this is her guru. She still cannot be alone with her guru in the home. So he entered the home, she offered obeisances, she says, please sit down. She left the home with the chadda over, like that. Very significant. Normally when you take any paraphernalia that is worn by the spiritual master, it is worshipable. You put it on the altar and you do aarti. You do? Aarti. What did she do? She? Prabhupada said she covered herself. She used it in a practical way. Covered herself, yeah. And then she went to the grocer man. Prabhupada said, grocer. Like grocery shop? Grocer man. And that man had some inclination to enjoy with her. For a long time. Like that. But she knew that. He didn't say it and neither she told him that she knew. She understood by energy. Like the grocer man. Like she said, you know I'm very poor, but I immediately require some grains and some vegetables and some salt and everything. And we don't have anything at home. Here's why. My Guru Maharaj has come. You know? I have to cook for him. And then he asked, what's the payment? She said, you know what's the payment. I'll come tonight. And he said, okay. So she took all the ingredients for cooking. And when she entered the kitchen, it's like another area of the home. You know? So Ramanuja was in the front area of the home. See? And she went to another area of the home and she bolted the door from the inside. See? And she prepared nice foodstuffs for her Guru Maharaj. And after it was ready, she unbolted the door, she left all the foodstuffs and Ramanuja Acharya had to feed himself. Because you know she has that kind of mood. Because husband is not at home. His disciple. Yeah. So when the disciple came and he saw that his wife was very nicely, you know, served Ramanuja Acharya. Yeah, so how did you get all these things? We can't afford. So she explained the whole thing to the intention of the grocer. Like that. And then the husband said, you know, look, you have to honor your word. You make sure you go there tonight. She strictly followed the instruction. So when she came to the grocer, and when he heard the whole story about how she'll do anything, she'll even go to hell to please her guru. See? Even go to hell to please a guru. So immediately the mind, the consciousness of the grocer changed. Oh, And she's such a chaste woman. She's just such a chaste woman. Such a faithful woman. And immediately said, "You are my mother. You have taught me something. You are my mother. You take as much ingredients you want and you take back as much as you like. You come every day and take as much. You are my mother." So it appears here very clearly that someone who is so transcendental as this Grihastha disciple, you know, the husband and wife, you know, of the Ramanujacharya, they were so transcendentally qualified and so poor, not even affording cloth for his wife, like that, and they live in separate quarters, and they couldn't even afford to have children. Now, even having children is a material opulence. See? They were so poor, just to afford to have children is also a material opulence. Mm-hmm. So they were completely free from the bodily conception of life. They were grihasthas. Now, how is it that she used the bodily conception of life to please her guru? Yet she was completely free from the bodily conception of life. Not even, they were so poor, not even having the opulence of having a child. How is it? See? So when I was reading this transcript of this lecture and also heard the lecture several times by Srila Prabhupada, it gave me a sense of realization of the gopis. That the gopis also will give up their chastity to be with, to please Krishna. See? But this is a little different, but the principle appears to be similar. That the wife is prepared to give up a chastity to please her guru, a spiritual master. This is without being instructed by the spiritual master. Without being instructed by the spiritual master. So sometimes, even if we are prepared to go to hell, you know, even if we are prepared to sort of engage in some activities that will please the spiritual master, but at the same time one has to be free from the identification of the bodily conception of life. One has to be free. Yeah. This reminds me of another very, very wonderful disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. He's still with us. So Srila Prabhupada gave him sannyas. Right? And I can say his name. His name is Nandakumar. You heard of him? You know him? Did he visit here? No. But you heard of him, right? Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada gave him sannyas. Yeah. But for some reason or the other, he could not maintain his sannyas. At the same time, he wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. He wanted to please Srila Prabhupada. Yes. This is during Srila Prabhupada's time. Okay. So he approached Srila Prabhupada and he said, "I know you gave me sannyas, but I'm feeling I'm not rightly situated. So can I get married?" Okay. So immediately Srila Prabhupada, you know, like Srila Prabhupada said something that the scriptures say, which is called vantasi. You know what's vantasi? What? You eat your own vomit. If a sannyasi leaves his ashram and goes and gets married, you're eating your own vomit. Very heavy. Okay. Srila Prabhupada said, despite this injunction of the scripture that when a sannyasi changes his ashram back to grihastha, it's as if you're doing this, eating your own vomit, like that. He said, but still you'll be okay. Like that. See? So then he asked Srila Prabhupada, how is that? That you're blessing me to leave my sannyas ashram and enter into the grihastha ashram? Srila Prabhupada said something to the effect like yes and no. He said, you are transgressing dharma. At the same time, you still want to please me. At the same time, you still want to please me. So therefore, it is okay. It is okay. Now just see how a person like Sripad Maravanda Puri enshrines the principles of dharma that is beyond dharma, and he can make an adjustment. So Srila Prabhupada follows in the footsteps of Sripad Maravanda Puri. See? Then he asks Srila Prabhupada, what is the lesson to learn? Then Srila Prabhupada said something to the effect that you are entering the grihastha ashram to please me. Right? But as a sannyasi, you're not able to please me. So the principle is to please the spiritual master. And the practicality may vary from circumstances of where you're at. See? And then Srila Prabhupada also said, your example will be a precedent and set an example for others not to just accept sannyas like that. So you are the example for us in ISKCON. You know? Stane stite. You know what that means? You stay in your ashram and you make spiritual advancement and still please the spiritual master. See? So when I heard this anecdote, like I'm paraphrasing in my own words for the lesson to be learned, then I thought, that's quite amazing. That's quite amazing. And it is also supported by Srila Prabhupada here in the Bhagavad Gita. Here we are. This is in chapter 13, text 8 to 12. These texts are grouped together, and there's a kind of lengthy purport for these five verses that are grouped together. But there's a particular word that Srila Prabhupada uses, and he uses it very, very often in all of his lectures and other purports also. And it's a famous word. It's called Acharya Upasana. You may have heard this, right? And the translation of Acharya Upasana, Srila Prabhupada says, approaching a bona fide spiritual master. And in the purport to Acharya Upasana, Prabhupada says as follows. As for acceptance of this spiritual master, that is essential. Because without the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot progress in the spiritual science. One should approach the spiritual master with all humility and offer him all services so that he will be pleased to bestow his blessings upon the disciple. Now what really shook me about almost 30 years ago is the next line. And I checked this with the archives with a devotee called Ranjit to go into the microfiche and see if it's as it is. And he did. And he checked, and it is as it is. No change. So this is the line. Because a bona fide spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advanced without the disciples following the regulative principles. Crystal clear. Then the next line is a different O. O means a separate line. O, The regulative principles will be easier for one who has served the spiritual master without reservation. See? So here's a disciple of Sri Padramanujacharya in a woman's body, completely transcendental, not even having the opulence of children. He's ready to break the regulative principles to please a guru. But here, Srila Prabhupada says slightly differently. That you have pleased me so much, but now you're not following the principles properly. But because you have pleased me, I will still bless you, even if you're not following the regulative principles. See? So what does this mean? This simply means that many people in the world, including, to an extent, practicing devotees, you know, they may engage in some illicit sex life or meat eating or gambling or intoxication. You know, alcohol and so forth, drugs. They may do that. Yeah. See? So Srila Prabhupada terms them. He gives a term. He calls it fallen devotee. He calls it fallen devotee. He may be fallen, but he's still a fallen devotee. Yeah. And Srila Prabhupada in Nectar of Devotion, translating Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu into Nectar of Devotion, an original verse of Srila Rupa Goswami, because I went to the original verses to see it's like that. Yes. And Srila Prabhupada said sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes it is better to associate with a devotee who is fallen than a perfect non-devotee. See? So what's the principle behind this whole thing? You know, one may not be able to practice Krishna consciousness 108%. Not 100%, 108%. Yeah. But if you become attached just to one person who's following the basic standard of pure devotional service, which means following the regulative principles, chanting minimum 16 rounds daily, only honoring Krishna prasadam that's cooked by devotees, not from Haldirams, or Bikana or whatever, right? Or Jain meal on airplanes. Only honoring Krishna Prasad. Following the four regulative principles, chanting minimum 16 rounds of japa daily, only honoring Krishna Prasadam, serving the devotees, Vaishnava Seva, you know, Namagana Sadaruchi, chanting japa, and serving the devotees, and bringing new people to introduce new people to practice Krishna consciousness, Jiva Doya. So if you do these things, you know, chanting the holy name, serving devotees, bringing new people to Krishna consciousness, following the four regulative principles, only honoring Krishna Prasadam. These five things, if you do that, then if you're not doing those things, but you become attached to one person like that, who's doing that, then you have a very, very good connection to be saved, to take a lower species of life and still be a human form of life. You have a very, very good connection. At least become attached to one such person who's following the basic standard of pure devotional service. What to speak of being attached to Srila Prabhupada, who's definitely way above the basic standard of pure devotional service. And that's what can save one and all, including those who are potential devotees but not devotees yet. and then it reverses in the consciousness. When you become completely transcendental like this grihastha couple, then you're ready to do anything to please your guru. Then you'll do anything to spread Krishna consciousness. Where you can always break, sometimes Prabhupada said, you break a lesser rule for a higher rule. Not often. It mustn't become a habit.
What?
All right. We can take some comments from Rasa Mandala Prabhu and Radha Gopinath Prabhu before we take some questions. So please share your wisdom with us.
Maharaj, thank you for a wonderful class. Could I ask a question, please? Or a second question?
You know, you appreciating, thank you for your wonderful class. I appreciate that also. But at least, you know, purify us.
I will ask a question then.
No. Can you give us some words of wisdom and some first, and then we can take your question?
I'm not sure.
It's my humble request.
I think you're very right in summarizing the essence of making the right decision is always to ask that question, is this pleasing to my spiritual master? And it's almost like, in my mind, I would consider it, or it could be considered, the pinnacle of morality or ethics. However, my concern is, moving on to my question very quickly, and you may have alluded to this, I think you did, but I'd like a little more clarification, if possible, from you. There is a danger that one may transgress normal rules and regulations, what we sometimes term, and perhaps in a pejorative way, mundane morality, in the name of pleasing my spiritual master, or somehow in the name of a spirituality that transcends what we call mundane morality. I wonder if you'd kindly clarify the qualifications one needs to have to actually abandon certain either devotional principles or more regular moral principles in order to please the spiritual master.
All right. So let's hear from Radha Gopinath Prabhu to respond to that question.
I'll leave the question to you, but I'll just... I was just thinking how this disciple, by that service attitude, imbibed the mood of Ramanujacharya, who was ready to go to hell also to serve his guru and spread the holy name. I was... we were discussing about the aim of Shastric study, and there we talked about mood and mission. And there's only one mission and there's only one mood. The mission is the Lord Himself comes to take everyone back home, back to Godhead. That's the only mission. And the mood is...
Or the Lord representative comes.
Yeah, or even the Lord Himself comes.
And His representative.
Yeah, along with His representative. And the mood is ready to go to hell. The gopis were ready to go to hell by giving the dust of their feet to relieve Krishna's headache.
Mm.
Headache was the mission.
Yes.
And they were ready to go to hell. Haridas Thakur went through hell to actually, literally went through hell to spread the mission of Lord Chaitanya.
And Srila Prabhupada says in one purport, just to compliment what you're saying, and he said, and my favorite example is Lord Jesus Christ. Prabhupada says that. in the purport in Bhagavad Gita. My favorite example is Lord Jesus Christ. Exact words. I can show you in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Go ahead.
So I was thinking the mission is the headache, transcendental headache of the Lord.
Yes.
How will all the suffering souls be delivered?
Yes.
And the mood is to relieve that headache, you're ready to go to hell.
Yes.
So how even Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur had a headache. How will it spread all over the world, this new mission?
Yes.
And Prabhupada was ready to go to hell, leaving Vrindavan and going to New York.
Yes.
So I think this is in parampara. Ready to go to hell to fulfill the mission. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to make a statement to Rasamandala Prabhu's question, and then he can elaborate on that statement. Right? So Rasamandala Prabhu, I'm going to ask you a question which includes that statement so that you can answer your own question. Is that okay? So how do we follow the spirit of the law and not the letter of the law? That's my question. Which is the answer to your question. You follow the spirit of the law but not the letter of the law. Please.
You want me to answer my own question? I think one is to be very careful about understanding what will please my spiritual master. Can I give you an example, if I may? I was once giving a course, an educational course, teacher training course, in which one devotee, well, all the devotees, I very much value, which I think is a Vedic principle, commitment. So we asked all the devotees to commit to come to all the lessons. One devotee, about the third day, came to me and said, Rasamandala, I can't come to class today because I've got to pick up my Guru Maharaj from the airport. So I was a little concerned and I thought, well, it seems like a good reason. But I asked him, what would your Guru Maharaj want you to do? Would he want you to pick him up, or would he want to arrange you to arrange that someone else picks him up and you honor your agreement to come to the course? I'll leave the decision to you. And he made another arrangement for someone else to go and pick up his Guru Maharaj. So I thought,
That will please his Guru.
That might be, So one, I think my thought on this is one has to be very, very careful to ask oneself what is actually going to please my spiritual master. And therefore I think Radha Gopinath Prabhu mentioned the idea of really understanding not only the mission of the Guru, but the mood of the Guru.
Yes.
And how that is real love.
Yes.
When you know what will actually please my spiritual master, even before he asks us.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to conclude, we conclude at now? What time we conclude? 9:30. Just to conclude, we all are aware that Srimati Radharani is not on the bodily conception of life. Right? So I did some research on this kind of consciousness of this Grihastha disciples of Ramanujacharya. Now in the last chapter of the Antyalila, chapter 20, it is very clear that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives us the verse of the apex verse of the Shishastakam prayers, Aslasyava Padaratam Pinastumam Adashana Mamahatam Karotuva Yata Tatava Vidyatulambato Matpananatastu Saeva Napara. There, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami as well as Srila Prabhupada supports that this verse is originally spoken by Srimati Radharani and not by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Srimati Radharani's consciousness, is the consciousness of Srimati Radharani. Krishna, the consciousness of Krishna in relation to Krishna is the consciousness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means, you know, how will it be like to serve myself? So that's Mahaprabhu. So therefore it's originally spoken by Srimati Radharani. Now we should bear in our consciousness that Srimati Radharani has nothing to do with the bodily conception of life. See? So when Srimati Radharani says, you know, mama hatam karotuva, you know, the literal meaning of hatam means kill. Means kill. Like in the morning in prayers, you know, to circumambulate Tulsi Manin. Yani kani chapapani brahma hatyadi, the kill of a Brahman. Like mama hatam karotuva. So Srimati Radharani is expressing herself that look, you know, adashana, because you are not present before me, I cannot exist. You are killing me. You're killing me. So then Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse in various places. It's in my notes somewhere. That Srimati Radharani feels, even if you are giving me the greatest unhappiness by not being present before me to serve you, because you're taking my service away. If you want to be me, I won't exist and you won't exist. So that's what's happening in this verse. But that is making me most unhappy. It's making me most be in the most suffering condition that's beyond, you know, words to describe. So you're making me suffer, you're making me unhappy, you're making me depressed, you're making me stressed. But if my unhappiness, my stress, my depression, and my pain and suffering gives you the greatest unhappiness, give you the greatest happiness, then my unhappiness is my greatest happiness. So the avesh of that consciousness, a feature of that consciousness entered this disciple of Ramanujacharya. She was not looking forward to associate with the grocer, clearly, right? She was so unhappy doing that, that now I'm going to go in the evening to him. She was so unhappy. She was morose, she was sad, but she had to follow the instruction of her dharampati, a husband who was a pure devotee. Now you go, you must honor your word. See? So her unhappiness in like offering herself to break the regulative principles is her greatest happiness to please a guru. But when she went to the grocer and he saw that she is really not in the mood of doing this, then his heart became cleansed by her association. See? And then he didn't see her as an object of sense gratification. He saw that she's my mother who's trying to please her husband, who's trying to please his guru. See? So even if we... You see, that is only coming from a person who is free from the bodily conception of life. So just to respond to Rasa Mandala's, you know, question, you can only break a lesser rule for a higher rule without consultation if you are free from the bodily conception of life. That's the example. You know, Srila Prabhupada did not consult with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to allow young women to live in the ashram. Right? Srila Prabhupada did not consult with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, to marry his disciples as a sannyasi. You know, actually do the ceremony also. But he was free from the bodily conception of life. He doesn't need to consult authority because he's not on the bodily conception of life. So even if he places people in the bodily conception of life, even like an old sannyasi living with young women in an ashram, practically living together, like that, he's breaking a lesser rule for a higher rule. And you will always be protected not to fall in the bodily conception of life. And that's what happened to Ramanujacharya's disciple. Ramanuja protected him. So I believe we can conclude now. Is that okay? Srila Prabhupada ki. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki. Sri Ramanuja Acharya ki. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo. What's your name? What's his name? Nanda Gopal Prabhu ki. Now what are you going to say after that? Say, Ananta Koti Vaishnav Vrinda ki. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.